What was it that I could no longer do? It was the fear. I couldn't handle the fear and the terror anymore. I knew it would kill me. It's an untouched mission field right here, all over the world. And I pray, please show them love at the door, because I pray that my family members, the third and fourth generations of which I do not know, I pray that somebody shares the light of Christ with them when they knock on their door.
Welcome to another edition of Apologetics Profile. I'm Dave Mitchell. Thanks for joining us. The Bible tells us that Jesus Christ is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation, for by him all things were created, both in the heavens and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created by him and for him. Our conversational style interviews are designed to help and encourage you to better understand how our faith in Christ is able to address the multitude of non-Christian ideas and worldviews of our time. Here is your host, staff apologist Daniel Ray.
If Jehovah's Witnesses came to your front door, what would you do? Are you prepared to give a defense for the hope that is in you? Do you know enough about what they believe and what you believe to have a thoughtful and intelligent conversation with them? We here at Watchman Fellowship certainly wish to help you cultivate how to have meaningful and productive conversations with Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, Muslims, atheists, or anyone who is not a follower of Christ. Our episode this week is no different. We hope that this will give you insights and helpful suggestions as to how you can have a productive conversation with a Jehovah's Witness. Take, for example, 1 Peter 3:18, where we read that Jesus was raised from the dead by the Holy Spirit. Jehovah's Witnesses traditionally interpret this passage to mean that Jesus rose from the dead as an invisible spirit, not in a physical body. The scripture teaches, however, that the entirety of the Trinity was involved in raising Jesus from the dead, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. You can see verses from Acts 2:32, 13:30, Romans 1:4 and 6:4, Ephesians 1:19 and 20, John 10:17 and 18, and especially Luke 24:39, where Jesus says, quote, "See my hands and feet, that it is I, myself. Touch me and see, for a spirit does not have flesh and bones, as you see that I have," end quote. In the notes of this episode, we have a free 4-page profile on Jehovah's Witnesses that can assist you in cultivating thoughtful conversations with those whom you may meet at an airport, as I did recently, or at a post office, as Watchman President James Walker did once, or more commonly, at your front door. See the notes of this episode to get your free profile. You can even use it on your smartphone or tablet. Just a small technical note, this interview was recorded live in Tallahassee, Florida at the 2023 Evangelical Missions to Non-Christian Religions. Here on part two of James Walker's conversation with former Jehovah's Witness Elaine Bales, you'll hear about some of the organization's doctrinal and institutional problems it faces, and be reminded that Jehovah's Witnesses are not finally the enemy. Elaine shares how it is vitally important that we show compassion, kindness, patience, understanding, and ultimately the love of Christ as we strive to present the gospel to Jehovah's Witnesses. Simple kindness is a seed that can take root and bear fruit. Here once again is Watchman President James K. Walker.
Welcome to a special edition of Apologetics Profile Podcast, and we're broadcasting this from Tallahassee, Florida, at the annual meeting of EMNR, Evangelical Missions to Non-Christian Religions. I'm privileged to serve on the board of directors of that organization, and we've got just a great group of speakers talking about all kinds of issues about defending the Christian faith and Christian apologetics. And my special guest back for this week's podcast is Elaine Bales. And Elaine is a former Jehovah's Witness, and she shared her story with us already about her background as one of Jehovah's Witnesses, what it was like, how she came out. And in this case, and unlike every case, she came out of the Watchtower Society, but she came to Jesus. And that doesn't always happen. So pleased on that. So welcome back to the podcast.
Well, thank you so much. It's such a joy to be back.
Well, I'm glad that you're with us. And now, last week you shared your story with us, but you began to touch on this whole idea that the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, the official organization of the Jehovah's Witnesses, is a organization in crisis right now, a multinational corporation, really, with tremendous, powerful history of just being a juggernaut of publications and just filling the world with their magazines. Some of their books have been in the top most published books in history in magazines, publications. I got to tour some of their publishing facilities in New York State, and was just amazed at the amount. They're buying rolls of paper by boxcar loads, and just an amazing amount. But in the recent years, there have been a series of crises that have hit the organization, and it could be that the organization we've known historically, we may never see this again. Tell us, what are some of the things that are happening that is causing this crisis? The magazines, where are they?
Absolutely. You know, you just said that they've sold so many millions and millions of publications. The reason being is that the rank and file Jehovah's Witnesses, they're called publishers. And we had a quota of how many. Now, when I was in, we used to have to buy our publications. So I, as a teenager, had a quota of every 2 weeks, I had to buy so many Watchtowers and so many Awakes. So let's just say I had to buy 24 a month. I personally had to buy them. Every single publisher all around the world. And then we went door to door, and most of the time we didn't place them from door to door. So we ended up with stacks of them. But if we did place them at door to door, not only did we give the organization our money to buy our quota, but then when we got the money from the householder, we were counseled, more like pressured, to give that money as well. So they got double, right?
So it wasn't that much money. I mean, they were fairly cheap to buy, but if you start multiplying by the millions of magazines, every they were doing one Watchtower a month and one Awake.
They were doing two each, so four a month every 2 weeks.
Weekly. It was a weekly. Okay, so if you look, the Watchtower Awake, when you combine them together, it's a weekly publication. And so you start multiplying that by the millions, and even if you're only getting a dime or a quarter or something, and then, like you're saying, in some cases you're getting two donations.
Correct. And this was in the 70s and 80s now. Okay.
Right. And there was a case involving Gene Swagger,
right,
of all people, and that the state of California filed a lawsuit that taxes were owed because these religious publications of the charismatic evangelist Jimmy Swagger was actually a tax, was a sale in which sales tax, state sales tax in California was due.
Right.
And I don't know if many people realize that the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society actually filed a friend of the court brief on behalf of Jimmy Swagger, the charismatic evangelist, because they realized the implications. If they had to pay state taxes on every Watchtower that was sold, or an Awake magazine that was sold, every booklet or book that was sold throughout the United States, or even the world perhaps, it would be hundreds of millions of dollars. And so what they ended up doing was Jimmy Swagger lost the case,
right,
lost an appeal. And so they have this new light. We're not going to sell them anymore. We're going,
right,
to do the donation. So,
right.
But that was a crisis in a sense. But that, and I wondered how that was going to affect the machine that it's always been, in my view, the Watchtower magazine. The Armageddon has been the carrot that pulls that Watchtower cart door to door.
That's right.
And that generates the revenue.
It does.
So that affected, the Jimmy Swagger case affected the revenue, but not like what's happened recently.
Right. And, you know, not only that, but what we found in the last year or so is that Jehovah's Witnesses, the organization itself, and what I'm speaking about is always the organization, not the indoctrinated. My family members are still knocking on doors as indoctrinated Jehovah's Witnesses, four generations of them right now. But governments were paying the Jehovah's Witness organization based on the number of members they have proselytizing for them. So my whole life, when I filled out that little publisher record card of, you know, this month, how many hours I knocked on doors, how many magazines I placed, how many Bible studies, how many return visits. Remember, Jesus says, if you go and they don't listen to you, shake the door, shake the dust off your feet. Do not go from house to house, but that's what we were doing. So we turned in this publisher record card every single month. And that's how the Jehovah's Witness organization was getting their money from the governments.
Well, I don't understand that. So what government was giving them money and why?
Well, for instance, Spain was giving them money as a charitable organization because they were proselytizing.
So the state was supporting any church, and the Watchtower said, this is how big our church is and how many members that we're servicing. And so they're getting a
stipend.
Government subsidy, really.
Millions and millions.
I did not realize that.
And not only that, but the country of Norway has just deregistered them. They've taken away their religious registration as a religious community because of their shunning practices, because of basically the violation of human rights, how they treat children. So if a Jehovah's Witness child needs a blood transfusion, that's against their rules, and they will not give them a blood transfusion. And Norway said, we don't like that, you're gone. And it was appealed, and they lost the appeal. So now in the country of Norway, if a Jehovah's Witness wants to get married, an elder cannot marry them because they're not considered religious.
In our last episode, you touched on some of the differences between what we believe as traditional Christians, the Bible, and then what the Watchtowers taught. So they you have a God who, for all intent and purposes, is not a God of love. Jehovah is a vindictive God who is destroying almost everybody at Armageddon.
Right.
And you don't see how much God loves you. And that was you said your wake-up call. That Jesus is different. He's the angel Michael who didn't die on a cross and never rose bodily from the dead. And he is not the second person of the Trinity. So you have all these theological differences. But you also have some kind of practical differences. So the blood transfusions, you know, what's the deal with that?
What I can tell you is when you see, one thing the Lord did for me was he called me to missions in 2005, and I thought I was going into the jungle, but little did I know was that the Lord was going to put me behind a camera in 2019 and give me this ministry to ex-Jehovah's Witnesses all over the world. And what I do is I expose them for their lies. So I get them and I share Christ with them. All right. So one of the things.
Where's your channel located?
Sure. It's called JW Escape, and it's on YouTube.
JW Escape. So you have a website, JW.com,
mm-hmm.
And then you have JW Escape on YouTube. And what would be some of the programs, tell us what you do on that channel.
Sure. So it's a beautiful ministry to not only Jehovah's Witnesses who are still in the organization trying to get out, but it's also for ex-Jehovah's Witnesses trying to get their head straight. It's also good for Christians to learn exactly what's being taught so that they could counter, especially apologists. What I do now, I've honed it down. Every single week, the Jehovah's Witnesses study their weekly Watchtower article. And what I do is I recap that article every week. And I prove their lies from their own literature.
So you're taking what they're looking at that week and you're deconstructing it.
Absolutely.
And you're putting light on it.
Using the very same verses they cite in their articles. It's such a beautiful ministry, and that the Lord is just so great. He's so great.
JW Escape.
Yes.
On YouTube.
Yes.
So, popular channel. You get a lot of views?
I do. I was getting about 100,000 a month.
Wow. Well, there's a bunch of need out there for this kind of message.
Yeah. But let me tell you, here's the crux of it with Christ. Yes, they teach he's Michael the Archangel and he was just a man. That's big. They talk about his death all the time. Death, Christ's death. Here's what they're doing. The Jehovah's Witnesses believe that their eight leaders, now there's nine, they're self-proclaimed brothers of Christ who will ascend to heaven. They're the only ones going to heaven. And there's some more going to heaven. But my point is, they're creating martyrs. When you go back in their literature, you see that the more martyrs who die on their behalf, the higher they ascend to heaven.
Define martyr. What is a Jehovah's Witness martyr?
So, basically, a Jehovah's Witness who willingly dies on the behalf of the organization.
So now, I've seen Watchtowers, or maybe it was Awake, one of their magazines, that had like a Zoom meeting of all these little pictures of faces, and I was horrified. These were people, including children, who died rather than receiving a life-saving blood transfusion during a medical emergency. And so instead of being horrified or shocked by this, they're celebrating those deaths.
Right. So that's one way they're creating martyrs, is through the blood policy.
Okay.
All right. So the more Jehovah's Witnesses who willingly die on the behalf of the rules of the organization, all right, the higher the co-rulers with Jesus will ascend. So here's the point. In their literature, they teach that Christ is the first rider of the horsemen, of the four horsemen. I think that's Revelation 6. You have him with the bow, with on the white horse, with one crown, and then you have the co-rulers following him. So what they're doing is, you see, they're ushering in the four horsemen of the apocalypse. They have their boots on the ground. They've had the boots on the ground for 150 years or so, declaring this: our God is going to come and destroy everybody who is not one of us.
Of course, the history of it is they kept setting dates for this to happen. It was supposed to happen. Armageddon was supposed to strike, they said, in 1914, and then they changed it in 1918, and then 1975. There was another, I think, major date change in 1995 concerning the last generation. And of course, most of those times they were wrong.
That's correct.
All those times they were wrong. But the average Jehovah's Witness doesn't know this information, and it's morphed into now. They're not really setting a date specific, like a year or a month. What they're doing now, though, is with the imagery. Tell me what they're doing now with these four horsemen.
Yeah, they're showing their leaders coming behind the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and their imagery is terrifying, because they are showing the Jehovah's Witnesses, the rank and file, hiding in a basement while, you know, military men with very large guns are coming to get them. And then the next scene is they wake up in paradise. So the children are in the audience. And this is another reason why the governments are turning against them, because their extremely violent nature. They speak of death and war. And listen, I should know, because I study their articles in great depth every single week.
But isn't the idea, though, that if you are a good Jehovah's Witness and you turn in your report of your, you know, the hours that you spent going door to door proclaiming the kingdom, however they want to say it, don't you get to survive Armageddon? Isn't that the beauty of it? Don't you get to possess one of these nice neighborhood houses that you've been knocking on the door, and you can go back. And so, but now it sounds like Armageddon means you're gonna face government military attacks, and it doesn't sound like a very pleasant experience even for Jehovah's Witnesses.
Correct. A Jehovah's Witness can be faithful his entire life, pioneered 90 hours a month, done everything, followed all the rules, but if they don't endure to the end, if they have a doubt when that military man has the gun pointed at them, which is what these images are showing, graphic videos, then that's it. He's lost his life.
In our last episode, you mentioned that selling some of the assets, some of the property, the Brooklyn headquarters, I guess they still have the farm, don't they, where they do, but it was billions of dollars, not millions, but billions of dollars, and we mentioned that they may desperately need this money. The door-to-door literature sales, which turned into the door-to-door literature donations, that has dried up.
It has, yes, absolutely.
And so what, but there's another pressure, financial pressure, that's coming on them. One of our supporters at Watchman Fellowship is an attorney who was involved with a class action lawsuit against the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society about child abuse. And he actually deposed some of the governing body members in New York about this. That case was settled right before the trial, and undisclosed what the settlement was. But the attorney told me it was he was very happy of how his clients were compensated. So couldn't give me a number, but that's one of numerous lawsuits just in the United States. Tell us about the child abuse. Why is the Watchtower liable for things that are going on in the Kingdom Hall and within the Jehovah's Witness congregation?
Sure.
And what are they doing wrong? What's leading to these problems?
Absolutely. Well, you know, they're sweeping things under the rug. They've done it. They have friends in very high places. But what's happening is, God is so good, is that their crimes are now being exposed. And their crimes are that they're harboring pedophiles. It's rampant within the congregations. And now it's all coming out. $35 million lawsuit in Montana. What the most recent case that's happened is the Pennsylvania grand jury created a 4-year investigation into sexual abuse that's being covered up in the Jehovah's Witness organization. Now, because Jehovah's Witnesses are taught that everything on the outside is evil, they go to the elders when there's an issue with anything. So I was in two different congregations in my life, and we had really good congregations. They were really good. But I can tell you, two of my friends as children told me that they were being molested, and I didn't understand that. Looking back, both congregations, nothing ever happened. It was always covered up.
So one of the problems was that Watchtower has a policy,
yeah,
that if something like that is reported, any kind of crime, any kind of sin, that you have to have two witnesses.
Correct.
And so if you don't have two witnesses, you don't deal with it at all. Well, if you have a child reporting some kind of sexual abuse, you're probably not going to have two witnesses.
No.
And so we're required by law in the United States that,
right,
you have to go to the police or the Child Protective Services, someone. You've got to report that. You don't get to decide that. But the Watchtower's policy was the elders are going to determine if there was a problem or not. The elders are going to investigate. But there's no need to investigate unless you have two witnesses.
And that Which there is never
a,
is.
That is a devilish policy.
It's horrific.
And it makes you able to harbor these pedophiles. And so what you're saying is there's many, many cases, multi-million dollar cases coming up right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jehovah's Witnesses are losing them.
They're losing them. They're being exposed. The elders say that they handle the sin, but they don't see it as a crime. Okay? So the Pennsylvania grand jury opened up a 4-year investigation into this. They're going to the leadership. And in February of this year, they arrested 9 men connected to the Jehovah's Witnesses. And they consider it the nation's most comprehensive investigation yet into abuse within the faith, because they have a problem, a systematic cover-up of hiding pedophilia. Now, there's another recent something that had occurred is that their legal counsel, Philip Brumley, lied to the court about a particular case. He wrote a 2.5-page affidavit to identify the roles and purposes of the legal entities at the time that the incidences of child abuse took place. So basically what he did was he wrote this affidavit in the present, saying that the leaders, that the organization has nothing to do with the policies.
There was a structure change, I think, because they anticipated this many years ago, they restructured the organization in two halves. So you had the spiritual leaders, the governing body, who made the ecclesiastical, you know, doctrinal, scriptural, controlling the publications. And then you had this other legal arm that actually owned the assets and property. It's like, well, we don't know who those people are. So if you want to sue us for something we've done, we own nothing. You have to go sue this other organization. But the courts have mostly seen through that.
They have, and this Watchtower attorney was just fined $154,000, which was the cost of the court investigating his affidavit and finding him to be a liar.
Wow. So you have two problems that multiply on each other. First of all, the Watchtower magazine sales have become donations, and then now not even donations. And then where did all the issues go? 24 Watchtowers a month, 24 Awake magazines a month, and they have axed that to the bone. How many do they have Watchtowers now?
Right. So they were doing 2 Watchtowers a month and 2 Awakes a month, so 24 a year. Now they might only be doing 3 Awakes a year, maybe something like that. And the Watchtowers that they're doing is one a month. Is regurgitating old elementary type of, there's no...
And it's primarily gone away from the actual physical magazine to jw.org.
Right.
JW.org is, they're trying to push everything towards that.
Well, yeah, because they can correct anything they want that's online, right?
Yeah.
They put nothing in print.
I asked some Jehovah's Witnesses. They were set up at the post office where our Watchman Fellowship mail comes in, and they were out there with their literature stand, and I got in a conversation, and that's the first time I found out, well, they only have a few Watchtowers and a few Awake magazines now. It's not 24 anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, what's wrong? What's happened of all the magazines? That's what you guys are known for. And she said, well, you know, there's a big push now to JW.org, and we do it online now. And I'm thinking, well, all the more reason you could have, you're not having to pay postage, you don't have to pay printing, you can have as many as you want at no extra cost, but they've sliced it. So it seems to me like you see this evidence that they are having a financial crisis.
Mm-hmm.
The income's not coming in like it was in the same way. The outgo is they have these multi-million dollar lawsuits involving child abuse that they're having to settle or losing in court. And then you can fill in on me, because I wasn't able to get all the details, but I was watching another podcast talking about the crisis dealing with real estate and the Jehovah's Witnesses, that the idea was that the congregations kind of really owned those Kingdom Hall properties, and there's been this move to deed that over to the organization. Tell me about what's happening and where's the money going.
So, you know, the congregations would raise their money to build the Kingdom Hall. It was basically quick builds. And they would donate the materials and the labor, and then the organization would give them a loan. and the property was either deeded locally or later deeded into the organization's name. Well, they went ahead and took over all of the property. So now the organization owns all of the real estate all over the world. When the local congregation had to raise the funds to do any repairs, to pay all the bills, to pay back the loan, okay? Then they were required to pay the organization rent and pay all the bills. So what you have now is they're selling off all of these properties all over the world. Not all of them, but a lot of them.
Let me get this straight. So let's say you've sacrificed tremendously for your local Kingdom Hall. You have one of those, sometimes they're built in like 48 hours. Mm-hmm. They come in a rush build, no windows, real quick up and down. But it's still a lot of money for you and the other people at the Kingdom Hall in that congregation. And then the deed has to be turned over to New York, to the Watchtower headquarters. And so now you don't actually hold the deed anymore. And then you find out a couple of months later or a year later, well, you don't have enough people to justify having this Kingdom Hall. So you're going to go into the next zip code or the next community over, and you're going to take one of the other hours there and just merge your congregation, and then they sell that property. And it's another, it looks to me like a cash grab, a way of generating revenue. And again, it's almost like they're desperate at this point to raise more money.
Not only that, they took over all of the assets as well, the bank accounts. So they were told to transfer all of the money in the bank accounts to the organization. So let's just say they had $30,000 in the bank account. They sent it and they said, when you need repairs, just, you know, put in a requisition and we'll give you the money. Well, that's not happening. So now the roof goes, they need $30,000. What does the headquarters say? Try to raise it. So they already raised the money for the new roof, but they had to relinquish it. I don't believe they're hurting for money. I believe they're just trying to grab as much money as they possibly can. Are they losing hundreds of millions of dollars in lawsuits? Yes, but they sold Brooklyn for $2.2 billion alone. What about all of these other multi-million dollar properties around the world that they're selling? I think they're trying to get as much as they can. And I think they're trying to get assets. They're trying to get campers. They're trying to get everything they possibly can from the indoctrinated before they finally have to go out of business, if that's the end result.
You talk about a shakeup of some type with the governing body. So there's two new members, and these are the guys, they're nine guys that actually run everything. They're the only ones today that are assured to go to heaven.
Right.
Anointed. And so they control everything, and now they control the assets and the real estate, the bank accounts, everything. But we just know a little bit of detail. Tell me about the governing body member that's not home anymore, that's not there anymore.
Sure. Well, a governing body member dies in his position. It's called finishing your earthly course. So even if you're sick, you just go and you come a little dormant and you've finished your earthly course. There were only two that were either removed from their position. One was Ray Franz,
yes,
who wrote Crisis of Conscience. The other one was Leo Greenlees, who there was a scandal of charges of sexual abuse with Leo back in, I don't remember when it was, 70s, 80s, okay? On February 22nd, 2023, an obscure little one-sentence blurb was put on the news section of JW.org, not on the main page, that on that day, February 22nd, World Headquarters announced that Anthony Morris III is no longer serving as a member of the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses. Joey. That's it. And it was there for a short time. Fortunately, I got a screenshot of that.
Wow.
The indoctrinated were not told. They learned through the grapevine from the ex-Jehovah's Witness community. So a lot of people are speculating what happened. He was the governing body member who covertly went 80 miles away from headquarters on a Sunday morning when Jehovah's Witnesses are at their meeting to a liquor store and bought $1,000 worth of McClellan scotch. So it's speculated through sources that, well, he's in the infirmary because he got a DUI, but he's not being charged.
And we don't know this. This is just
no, speculation. There's two schools of thought. One was that, but this comes right on the heels of the Pennsylvania grand jury investigation, where they're going to the top.
Mm-hmm.
So could it be that? Could it be? It's speculated that he was placing elders who had been accused, too many accusations, putting them somewhere else, kind of like what had happened in the Catholic Church with the priests.
Right.
So these are all speculations. Nobody knows. One day we'll know.
It would be nice to have some transparency right now.
Yeah. You know, the good thing about it being an online religion now is they've written Anthony Morris III completely off of their website. The videos and everything. Well, of course, the ex-Jehovah's Witnesses have those nasty videos.
Yes. But I never thought about that till you mentioned it, that part of the push to JW.org is you can change anything you want to now because it's all in the cloud. It's all online. And so, like, you know, we have a library going all the way back to the 1800s of original Watchtower publications. Mm-hmm. And it's great to be able to actually have the original to go back and say, see, this is what it said. And we've seen even different editions, like the Charles Hayes Russell, his studies in the scriptures, how later editions will go back and change things, especially involving embarrassing false dates and stuff.
Absolutely.
But now they can just, with a click of a mouse, they can go back and alter history, and there's no, unless you printed a hard copy of it, there's no way that you could verify. Like you said, you've got a screenshot, but if you didn't have that, how could you even verify it was ever there?
Mm-hmm. Right, that's correct. We have the videos as well. And you know, lastly, I recapped on my YouTube channel, it was a governing body update of the governing body speaking and giving their version of what's news. Back in February, maybe, or March, where one of the members, David Splain, said there's going to be shootings at Kingdom Halls. Well, all of a sudden, these shootings started happening at Kingdom Halls. And I find it very interesting that he would know that in advance. I wonder how. Well, we know he can't be prophesying that, because nothing they've ever prophesied has ever come true.
Yeah.
Right, so somehow they have this insider information, false flag events. We don't know, but shootings started happening at Kingdom Halls. And one happened in Hamburg, Germany. You can do an internet search of that. This is tragic for the witnesses. We had one Jehovah's Witness sitting in the car while his family members were knocking on a door, and he was shot and killed in the car by a teenager. I think that was in Illinois. And then there was another shooting at another Kingdom Hall by ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. So it's almost like they're creating, not necessarily creating, but all of a sudden these ex-Jehovah's Witnesses are going in and causing mayhem at the Kingdom Halls, which is putting the indoctrinated in such tremendous fear. It's no way to live. And when I said in our last episode, what was it that I could no longer do? It was the fear. I couldn't handle the fear and the terror anymore.
You couldn't function.
I knew it would kill me.
Any final words?
It's an untouched mission field right here, all over the world. And I pray, please show them love at the door, because I pray that my family members, the third and fourth generations of which I do not know, I pray that somebody shares the light of Christ with them when they knock on their door.